On Pilot TV this week, we are heading into the woods with the Sherwood Bandit in Robin Hood on MGM+, catching up with some old friends in I Love LA on Sky, and ferreting out a conspiracy with Emma Thompson and Ruth Wilson in Down Cemetery Lane on Apple. And speaking of which, Ruth drops by the podcast as well to talk to us all about it. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. And I am joined, as is my wont, or won't, depending on how you want to pronounce it. How would you pronounce it, boy? Would it be a want or a won't?
It's definitely won't. It's not even any debate.
Yes.
Is it?
Won't. Yes.
I always feel like if won't feels like it needs an apostrophe. It feels like a contraction.
I think sometimes it's not about feelings and it's about what's right.
Yeah, Kay, I'm all about the vibes. I'm all about the vibes. And the vibes of that word to me say
very,
want.
Do you know what? You're a very vibesy guy.
Thank you. Yeah.
I can't believe you, of all people, is not being sticking to the facts of what won't is won't and not.
Well, it's like livery. I always thought livery felt more like a livery,
and
it
no,
is.
I mean,
it
James,
is livery.
Come on now.
But for a long time, I struggled with the vibes of livery.
What a ridiculous scenario this is.
Yeah, I mean, well, do you remember when he has to process stuff? I honestly think.
Yeah.
The lack of sugar is making you, process.
Yeah, it's going
right.
to my brain.
Yeah. It's not helping the rest of us.
I don't think it
exactly.
is.
Someone inject some sugar into his veins.
Hey, it's 20 days. 20 days.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
How are you feeling?
Respect. Absolutely terrible. But Kay's here. Hi, Kay.
Hi, James.
And Boyd is here as well. Hello, Boyd.
Hello.
What is it we normally discuss when we first get in here? I believe it is what we've been watching. Have you been watching anything, Kay?
Yes, I have. Now, I have been watching things that I'm probably not allowed to talk about, but I'm going to whisk through Celebrity Race Across the World. Boydo, you watched it?
No.
Okay.
You're allowed to talk about that. Well, I mean, you know, in the sense that it hasn't been broadcast yet, but equally we're not going to review it, so you're free to give your own opinions.
No, I meant as in like it's not Heartland.
Oh, that. Pilot. Oh, I mean, we don't worry about that anymore.
Okay, fine.
I mean...
Well, anyway, so it's
we
great
arguably
casting.
Should, but fine. No, carry on.
Listen... If you can talk about endlessly about Taylor Swift, I'm sure you can indulge me.
Yes.
Just talking about this television programme,
I mean,
which has great casting. It's got Roman Kemp and Harley Moon, his sister. Dylan Llewellyn from Derry Girls.
Yes.
He's fantastic with his mum.
And his mum.
Presents Anita Ronnie and her dad, and Molly Rainford, who's an actor, and her DJ boyfriend, Tyler West. And
Tyler West, a Bauer radio
Kiss
star.
DJ, yeah.
Kiss,
indeed.
Or often seen in the building.
A Strictly star, in fact, as well.
In fact, I saw him yesterday. Yeah,
yeah,
Strictly star.
He's a lovely guy.
Isn't Molly, she's a singer as well, isn't she?
Yeah, singer and actor.
Yeah, right, okay.
And they're both on Strictly. And the show, as always, is fantastically cast and, yeah, gets off to a cracking start. So anyone who's interested in that, it's on 6th of November, BBC One. Check it out.
The scheduling is very clever because that is on 8 o'clock on that date and then it's followed by the Traitors finale.
Yeah.
So that's a huge night for fans of excellent television formats, James.
I'm sure you take
the night off. Don't go anywhere.
I should point out that on the subreddit, there was a call for you two to do a Traitors Celebrity Traitors Spoiler Special.
Okay.
Consider that, Bruno.
It met broad approval from two vague camps. One of them, people who love the Traitors and want to hear you talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
The other, people who fucking hate the Traitors but want you to talk about it anywhere but other than on this main podcast. Yeah. So it, basically, it's a win-win for everyone. Because it silos the Traitors concept.
This is why I don't look at the
Thanks
Reddit.
For the feedback, listeners. I have the utmost respect and love for you. Thanks.
But some very
Appreciate
excited to hear you talk about it,
yeah.
And others very keen for you to talk about it in a confined space.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I say, it's a no-lose situation.
Well,
I think we should do it because at least our one, unlike the rest of the entertainment, will be accurate and and the things we say about it.
Well, I definitely have stuff to say about last night's show, but anyway.
God, so much to say.
Anyway, do you know what, Boydo? You and I will just have a phone call about it later.
Right, so you have no wish to do a spoiler special on the Traitors?
Yeah, we can do it. For sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The second show I've been watching is The Game of Wool, Britain's Best Knitter. Very cozy show for me. Real Heartland Cave show there. Channel 4, 2nd of November. Tom Daly's first major presenting role. Basically, the knitting equivalent of Sewing Bee and has epic challenges. Now, the first challenge, I mean, they do two challenges each show, one small, you know, individual brief and one group knit. And Boyd,
yes.
James, the first challenge is 10 hours long, right?
Do you know what? This was literally going to be my exact question. It was going to be, I mean, I have a very, shall we say, surface level understanding of knitting and how it works.
Other than
it broadly originates from sheep. But my understanding of knitting is, it's not a quick thing to do.
No.
It's not like you're watching 24. So How do you get the excitement? So, right, I'm just going to knit a sweater. See me in 3 weeks and it'll be done.
No, should I tell you what I was concerned about as well? But actually, it's very cleverly done. And they are like all sitting around knitting together and talking.
Is it time lapse?
It's a little bit of time lapse, but also you'll get, you know, not really actually, you're getting to know what it does is you're getting to know the knitters as you go along, you know, their backstories, the dynamics and et cetera. It is, they've made it work.
Is it like Formula One? We're like, yeah, she's using a Rothmans crochet hook there. That's a very, very serious needle for a very serious knitter.
Formula One commentary?
No, it was more like a snooker commentary.
Yeah, but also trying to be seductive.
Formula One is more, and they coming around the bend.
I think I was thinking more snookery, like quite subdued, quite a little bit quiet.
Do you know what? You've got very Steve Davis energy.
Thank you. Do you get like ringers will come in with like a special type of crochet hoop, thereby giving themselves an advantage, or is it an even playing field?
No, I mean, knitters are a nice bunch.
Are the judges?
As well, you may ask, they are Di Gilpin and Sheila Greenwell.
And Sheila. Yeah.
Wool creatives.
What's funny about this show is that it is literally like something out of W1A when they sit down and try and create new formats built around Great British, whatever. I mean, it really is.
This will be a very popular show in the style of Bake Off and Sewing Bee. I mean, it will be less popular probably than Bake Off. If anyone who loves a cozy craft show, get on board.
You can't eat a knitted sweater, can you? Whereas I think the Bake Off.
Generally give you the option to eat the stuff on Bake Off either. You more have to just watch it through the television.
Yeah, I think you'll find there's
they'll bring it round.
Consumption of cakes by the crew.
I'm sure they have a great time.
And the presenters, of course.
Just saying that we, as the viewer, generally get to sample the cakes.
I think it's the Bake
Off. We've yet to find a way of getting into our TV screens and transporting ourselves to the place.
But they could bring it round, I'm just saying.
On a Virgin bike. I like the idea. Of that.
I think it is the Bake Off final next week as well, isn't it?
Tuesday night. Get excited. I mean, the point of that though is there's only one winner, by the way, Jasmine. She's going to win it, so there's no point in watching almost.
Well, you say that, but someone we both know, I'm not going to name, did you see they posted about the Bake Off and saying something like they were so outraged by what happened that they're like, I'm never watching it again.
Oh, really?
I was like, wow.
That's extreme.
That's a big reaction.
Anyway. What could possibly happen to elicit that response?
Well, it's like someone who you don't think doesn't deserve to go through, or someone didn't deserve to lose out when, you know, you look at the quality of their bakes, whatever, and you think it's not reflected in the judges' comments and the decisions, etc. You challenge the decisions.
People get very invested in the contestants. I am such a person.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm not throwing soft fruits at anyone, but I'm just saying
that would be an
offence.
Inappropriate.
And lastly, I have watched the first episode of Series 10 of Shetland. Now, as you recall, I did it for work,
right?
Because I was reviewing it, but I haven't caught up, so that was a bit frustrating.
I don't mind, but James is bugbear. So you up to where on your casual?
I'm on season.
Watch?
I'm on series. I would say 6,
and then you've leapt forward to 10 to preview/review the new series.
Yeah,
I'm maybe having a panic attack.
I know. Yeah. I felt like that, but you know, I was tasked
with.
But
to be fair, it's a procedural, isn't it? It's like each series is a different case, so it doesn't matter. It's not.
I would like to issue an apology on behalf of all of us. So last week when I was talking about it, and I said, and you said, "Oh, who plays Jimmy Perez?" And I was like, "Oh, Dougie Henshaw," and you were like, "Doogie." It's all, you know, everyone corrected me on that.
Of course.
Well, actually, it's Douglas. So we got over familiar fast with him, and it's Douglas Henshaw. And I feel like we should show him that respect.
Oh, come on, look, it's Douglas Henshaw. It's like saying, but people call him Doogie. He's known as, it's like, you know.
Who says that?
Well, you know, Flick
when you
Kendall
know him as well as Boyd does, you can call him Doogie.
Exactly. You got the old Henshaw on your speed dial.
Yeah. Okay, Frankie Delatour told me.
That's Francis Galatour to you.
Oh, indeed. That's the point I'm making. Don't ruin the joke.
Oh, sorry. I don't know who that is, so I didn't realise it was a joke.
He's James Blaine your joke.
Yeah, I did. Sorry. Yeah. I trampled over that.
Yeah. And Flick Kendall have both come together to tell me that he's known as Doogie in the trade.
Well, anyway, when I was watching Shetland Series 10 and the credits rolled, and I was like, I just suddenly realised that I had become quite overfamiliar with that actor, and I wanted to apologise.
I've got a pronunciation apology to make as well.
Oh,
this is
it want versus won't?
No.
Damn it.
This is, what it is the Leonard and Hungry Paul, right?
That's yes.
what we reviewed.
Oh.
I really like that.
Yes. You know what I'm going to say?
I got this message
Did
as
you?
Well. Yes.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, God, what have we done?
Well, I'm going to read it out. I've got this message from Howard. And he says, Howard, and he says,
Howie.
Dear Mr. Hilton.
Uh-oh.
Oh, formal. It's with not good.
WRT, which I guess is with regard to.
Oh, okay. My God. Is this from a lawyer?
Well, it's quite legal, legalese,
shit.
Yeah. With regard to your contribution to the Pilot TV podcast, please note that... Now, I'm going to say this pronunciation, how we did pronounce it, how I pronounced it when we reviewed the show on this podcast. Please note that Laurie Kynaston, as I said it was, is actually pronounced Laurie Kynaston.
Oh.
Thanks, Howard Kynaston.
Oh, my God, please. Is that his dad?
Well.
Or brother? Or what?
I don't know.
Uncle?
I don't know.
Or do they just have the same last name?
I'm sure that he's related. But I don't know how. I don't know whether he's got brothers. Kynaston.
Can we just apologise to the Kynaston family, all Kynastons in the United Kingdom and abroad?
Like, now, the irony
does it say also, P.S., it's Lawrence, don't be so familiar?
No, it doesn't say that. But what's interesting is I've met Laurie Kynaston.
Oh, God, that's worse.
Yeah. And he was a delight and everything. And I'm sure I must have mentioned his name and pronouncing it wrong, that he must have heard. So part of me is thinking, oh, he knows that I mispronounced his name. He never corrected because he's too polite and nice. Whereas Howard, quite rightly, whatever relation he is to Laurie, has pointed out that we got it wrong. But it's fair enough.
Sometimes Laurie said Lowry as well, so I...
Lowry?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
I think you just made that up. Really?
Maybe not that spelling.
No, I don't know.
Lowry.
No, maybe the W. Okay, fine. Right. Anyway, I've somehow made it worse.
I've got that out of the way. And that also ties in with the fact that I watch more episodes of Leonard and Hungry Paul, and it is an absolute delight.
Are you really enjoying it?
Yeah, it's great.
A couple of people I've spoken to have said we're very excited because they're fans of the books.
Yeah.
So.
They've somehow...
I should say it's one book, isn't it?
It's one book,
It's not serious.
The genius of it is that you might think it's going to be a bit boring because it's all about being nice and decent and...
It's low stakes, isn't it? It's very
low stakes, deliberately low stakes, but actually it's so, from scene to scene, it's so engaging, and the characters are so fun, so much fun to hang around with, that it's not boring at all. It's very
I feel it's emotional high stakes because you're really invested in the characters.
But that's it. So something like Film Club as well is low stakes on the face of it, but there's quite a lot of kind of internal emotional drama in there, but it still has that cozy kind of feel to it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, anyway, it's fantastic. Yeah, I am going to talk about Saturday Night TV that I do every now and then, which is going to be the saviour of us all.
Well done, Boyd. Illegal.
It's still the saviour of us all.
Who's it saving?
Just television. Old-fashioned, linear...
What? Noel's House Party type stuff. That's what we're saying.
Noel's House Party type stuff. That's not the example I would have used.
Saturday Night Takeaway.
Saturday Night Takeaway. I mean, that's on an indefinite break.
Yeah, but it was a staple for many years, Boyd.
Yeah. No, of course. But the lineup at the moment is excellent because you've got The Wheel, which is the best format.
The Wheel of Time, yes, very good. Shame it got cancelled after the third season.
No. Michael Mackett is far more important, impressive, and tense... The Wheel.
I don't think it is.
Much better than The Wheel of whatever it was. Wheel of Fire?
Time.
The Wheel of Time.
Oh, my God.
God. Anyway, the new series of Michael McIntyre's The Wheel kicked off with an absolutely extraordinary episode.
Who's on
spoiler
it?
Spoiler alert if you haven't yet watched it, but I'm going to say it was this delightful woman who won £110,000.
Which
was one of the biggest victories ever. And... Joe Marler, star of Celebrity Traitors, of course, who's become a cult figure in many ways. He was the celebrity she matched herself with to win the maximum amount. He was bottom of the... So basically, if you match yourself with the celebrity who's got the least number of questions right, you get the highest amount of money. And he got the least amount right. Which somehow fans of, I think, the celebrity...
He's very astute. So,
well...
Yeah.
Is he, though?
I think he is. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. He's been astute in a couple...
He might not be book smart, which is what you're referencing to.
Indeed.
But life smart,
or
yes.
Quiz smart, apparently.
Game smart.
Well,
anyway.
He's got this woman... How much?
110.
Wow.
If the goal here is to get as many questions wrong as possible, I could make you both a fortune, so...
Wow.
Show us the money.
Yeah. Anyway, it's such a great format. And the other brilliant thing about the episode was that Reese Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton were on it together, sharing
the chair. Dream Wheel,
sharing the chair, and they were a delight together as well. The Inside Number 9 guys, and when you think that they did their own spoof version of game shows, which is an ingenious one of the best episodes ever, Inside Number 9, which was a total surprise, which they managed to deploy brilliantly secretly on BBC Two. Yes, Kay, question.
Question, is it a bigger chair or do they just have to be very clever with their leg positioning?
It's a bigger chair. It's like a double seat. Yeah, it's a bigger seat.
A little cocoon
yeah.
for them.
But they really, you know, the thing about the wheel is people do their chair dances.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, which are always, God.
They
I find
really, because I was like, is Reese, I know Reese Shearsmith. I've interviewed Reese Shearsmith countless times and he did it. He threw himself into the whole thing.
I think you have to, right?
The person who didn't throw himself into the thing and wouldn't do any dances was.
Who?
I've already given you the clue.
Marla
yeah. just sat there, although, and I was thinking, wow, he just refused to engage in the whole chair dancing thing.
Listen, I am just going to very briefly bring it up. Last night's Traitors on the bridge, he was busting out some moves.
He was busting out some moves,
he has got those moves
indeed,
in his arsenal. He should have
I think he was just making his own personal statement that he wasn't going to tap into.
He was being a killjoy.
James is literally like... I don't know, can't cope with this level of discussion.
You could be speaking Portuguese. I don't know who these people are. I mean, I know who Reese Shearsmith is.
To be fair, this is how I felt when you were talking about The Witcher on
fair.
Plus.
Fair, absolutely fair.
We all did.
But I don't know what's happening.
Anyway, it's far superior to The Witcher. It's brilliant. but what I was going to say, so you got that on BBC One. You got Strictly, which is not necessarily my kettle of fish, but I appreciate it. It's, you know, huge popularity, of course. Claudia and Tessa's last ever series. What, you're going to be in tears? Steady. And then you've also got on ITV, you turn over to ITV and you've got Ramesh Ranganathan's Parents Evening, which is a great format. Have you watched it, Kay? We haven't really discussed it in much detail, but this is where you have either a celebrity parent and their offspring, or you have a celebrity offspring and their parent. And Steve Pemberton was in this on the same night with his daughter, with his delightful daughter. So
a double dose
of Pemberton on these shows. He knows that these are quality shows and is getting paid, obviously, a huge amount of money.
I mean, it's Noel's house party, but...
steady. Yeah. And it's just a great format. And the joy of it is, Ramesh is so funny in it. He's absolutely hilarious.
We know who the show is.
His mum, I know. She's absolutely hilarious. But for some reason, the format allows him to be really cheeky. And then finally, you get the 1% Club, which is also an incredible format on IT, which has been their huge hit. That's been their huge... quiz show hit of the last few years for ITV, which is where, do you know what the concept is? I won't go into
it. Of course I don't. I've not heard of any of these shows.
I know. Anyway, Lee Mack hosts that, and Lee Mack was the host of the fake Inside Number 9 spoof game show. So it all knits together is what I'm saying. And basically, I can't go out on Saturday night now.
Mm,
I mean, I just
enough.
Have to watch these brilliant shows.
James, you do know what that 1% Club is, because don't you remember I read out one of the questions I got you and Boyd to try and answer?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, you did. That's true.
The final few questions are so difficult. I rarely get them right. They're really ingenious.
Wow.
Yeah.
Brain box boy.
So do you like, you're like Saturday night now, you're channel hopping between these various things.
And by the way, the wheel is all there for me to watch if I want to on BBC Previews, but I like watching it live.
Doesn't feel like something that really lends itself to binging.
Well, I would happily binge on it.
Really?
James,
back to back to back?
Oh, yeah, I would. But I stop myself. I don't do that. I deliberately, in this case, pace myself and watch it live as it goes out.
I really want you to go on that show, like for a set visit.
I've been demanding a set visit.
Come on.
It's my friend Dan who produces the fucking thing. And I also spoke to Michael McIntyre at an event recently and said, I really want to come and visit the set. I mean, I think they're slightly reluctant because there's lots of kind of like secret things the way it works that they don't necessarily want people to bang on about. But I would be,
Roving reporter Boyd Hanson.
No, I'm going to sort it out. I really need to do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a Christmas special coming up as well. So maybe I'll do it for that. Obviously, I filmed it already, but I mean.
Yeah.
You know, I do want to...
There's opportunity.
Yeah. It's fascinating.
Let 2026 be the year that boys' dreams come true.
Exactly, yeah. There's no studio audience, for example, James, in it.
What?
Yeah, because it's a massive set. They don't need it, do they? They've got the celebrities. I think also it started maybe close to lockdown, perhaps, which might be why there's no studios. I don't know. Anyway, I'll move on. Don't worry, James. I'm nearly finished. Not Saturday Night TV. Now, I'm mentioning this because we had a message for this on Pilot Plus, didn't we? Talking about Boots and asking why we hadn't. Reviewed it, and I said I had mentioned it. James accused me of not putting it on the calendar, whereas in fact I had put it on the calendar.
It turns out that was the case. He had put it on the calendar.
And it was a busy week.
I think it was a bit of a retcon. He put it in after the fact.
It was
little
there.
Rat.
I wouldn't do a retcon. What are you talking about? Can you tell? Can you tell when when time and date when people have added something to the calendar?
That's a good question. I don't. Not
Boyd,
to my not
Boyd
to best my knowledge.
Yeah, but no.
Maybe Boyd. Maybe
anyway,
you can.
I did put it.
Boyd, don't be that guy.
I did mention it on this very podcast that I'd seen some of it and I recommended it. And it was even though it was heavily embargoed till the day it came out. Anyway, I finished it now, and it is really, really good. It's as I've said before, it's based on a true memoir of a gay guy who joined the military when it was illegal in the early 90s in America to be a gay, whatever he is, soldier / marine, whatever the hell they are. And it's all about the incredibly grueling, unbelievably intense training they have to go through. And I'll tell you who the star of the show is, by the way.
Too distressing for me, almost. Or is it bearable?
I think it's bearable. Well, give it a go. I mean, the first couple of episodes are pretty much will show you the level of intensity that carries on throughout the whole thing. But the real star of the show is Max Parker, who used to be in which show, Kate?
Oh, yes. Emmerdale, yeah.
Yeah, he was a big Emmerdale
He's
star.
He's Strawberry Blonde, right?
For a couple of years, yeah. And yeah, honestly, he does an incredible, I'm talking of accents, an incredible, he plays this harsh, challenging kind of sergeant major type figure who drills, goes to all the drills with the soldier, and he is kind of borderline bullying, but his American accent, his whole like approach to the character is astonishing. You'd never guess he was playing some dude in Emmerdale a couple of years ago. Yeah, he's
which
absolutely
which is
brilliant. No, of course not. No, I'm not judging. I'm saying, but it is brilliant to see that someone who, and he was in Casualty before that, that someone who's grown up in those kind of shows, British shows,
an gets excellent this breeding
fantastic,
ground for talent.
Yeah, fantastic role in this big Netflix series. Yeah, it's very good. And this is, as I also mentioned in Plus, it's being judged by some of the right-wing American political types as a woke. It was discussed. I think went as far as Donald Trump even, like, commented on it, which is, you know, the level of fame of this
show.
That's
damning, already. Isn't it? Donald Trump, not a fan.
One might say it's damning, yeah. But, you know, let's not get into the politics of it, because James will cut it out anyway.
True story.
Yeah. What have you been watching, James?
Oh, God, I think I've lost the will to live. I've got to be honest with you. What have I been watching? Well, Gen V finished. Mm. That is now done. Well, this series is done anyway. It sort of leads us into some quite big things where I assume we'll channel into the final season of The Boys. But I quite enjoyed Gen V. I don't, as I've said before, hold with this whole it's better than The Boys thing now.
No.
But I think it's good. I quite enjoyed that. What else? I have watched most of Nobody Wants This, but haven't quite finished it. I think I've watched seven of the new series. I don't think it's a patch on the first series.
I was going to say, a lot of the reviews have said that. Yeah.
I said that to you with my own lips. And
you
I
did.
Said yeah. the main two... Well, actually, I'm going to save it because there's a listener question connected to it. So
but I mean, everything you said was correct, especially that at this point I only care about Morgan and Mr. Doctor, whatever his name is, and Esther and
Sasha.
Sasha. Yeah, I'm all about them now. I've got a bit bored, has to be said, of the main couple. But I still like the show. I'm really enjoying the show, but it's definitely, it's lost some of the first season magic, so we'll have to see where it goes from there. Okay, so... I watched an episode of Dead City, the penultimate episode of the second season of Dead City, and I've got one episode left of that season to go. It is already, I think it's gone into production of its third season already. I had a bit of a moment where I'm like, I have one more episode of this to go, but at this point, it just feels a little bit like an endurance test. Like,
you realise you're wasting your life.
What am I doing?
I think it'd be weird to duck out in the penultimate episode.
Well, this is kind of... But then at what point is it just like good money after bad? Like, why am I still doing this?
And then stop.
I mean, but then I've watched two seasons. Do I watch the third?
No. Like, just at the end of the season, no.
Just draw a line under it.
I think that would be really crazy and very against your, you know, character type.
To just
not
bail.
Watch the last episode. Yeah. That is like...
Maybe I'll do the last one.
Almost.
But I've got to the point now where I'm just actively mega bored. And I just, even though I really like Negan as a character, I can, like, some of the main storylines are not great, and I see kind of vaguely where it's going, and that's kind of maybe a little bit interesting, I don't know. But I just, I've maybe the Walking Dead sheen has come off for me a little bit. So I'm, that was a bit of an existential crisis for me.
Maybe it's time to say goodbye.
Maybe it is.
After the last episode.
Maybe it is.
Maybe try some episodes of The Wheel instead.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I have also watched 7 hours of Pluribus.
Course
the new have. Vince Gilligan
course
show.
Of
course I have. And it's embargoed, so I can't talk about what I think about it. But for those who don't know...
What does pluribus mean? Does it mean anything? It sounds like a disease.
It means many, doesn't it? Because is it pluribus
right.
unum?
Yeah.
So from many from one, which is the American... Because many states make one country. So pluribus is about many. So that the plot of this show... Ray Seahorn plays this romantic-y author who writes sort of smutty pirate fiction. And... an incident, a global incident that happens that may or may not involve extraterrestrials. And let's just say things get interesting for our main character, Carol. And I've watched 7 hours of that. And it has a lot of Gilligan in it And yeah, I'm having a good time with it. I think they've given me everything except the finale, which is obviously maddening. But we'll be talking about that very soon. In fact, we may have some people from the show in this very studio very soon as well.
Wow. So yeah, that's going to be huge.
Yeah. Fun times. So yeah, Pluribus, that's mainly what I've been watching last week. Every episode they made available to me.
I still think it sounds like a disease. Ooh, he's got a bad case of Pluribus.
Bad case of Pluribus, yeah.
Well, it's probably, I mean, it is kind of about, Pleurisy. At least, like, there's a virus situation.
Well, yeah, that's right. There's a petri dish on the poster.
We can mention that.
Yes. There is a kind of virus similar to a virus. Anyway, interesting show, lots to talk about, and we will do so at a later date. Okay, that's what we've been watching. And it's gone on for at least a month, but let's look at a listener question. What do we have, Kay?
We have a message from Jenny who says, "Dear Kay, James and Boyd, I've just finished series 2 of Nobody Wants This and had to write in support Kay's comment that the characters really are annoying this time around. with the exception of James, as you said, Sasha, I found the main character so irritating and was really disappointed by the season as a whole," which I think we both agree on.
Yeah, I get that.
Although I was looking, Variety says that actually the series 2 debuted with 8.6 million views in 4 days, so not too shabby.
But then I suppose because the first one was such a sort of surprise smash hit, wasn't it? That it makes sense.
And then Jenny continues, "I loved the first one, but this time round, the tension over Joanne's conversion seemed forced, and I felt there was no real jeopardy to the future of her relationship with Noah. I'll be filing this season in the things I pretend don't exist category, along with series 3 of Ted Lasso and the 4th Indiana Jones film. Have you ever been so disappointed?
And 5th.
Have you ever been so disappointed with a series or episode of a show that you've decided to deny all knowledge of it? Thank you for the excellent pod. I look forward to both episodes every week. Best wishes, Jenny."
Jenny from the block. This is a real, like...
I've got an answer. Oh,
well, no, good. Go on then.
Well, I was going to be uncharitable and say all of and just like that.
Fair.
Right?
Yeah,
but
that
actually,
would be fair.
I will stick with, you know, Season 2, I think, particularly, because that's when Carrie and Aiden got back together. I mean, there was good news in that Miranda ditched Che, which, you know, long time coming.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, just basically the whole of And Just Like That, as well as, I feel similarly about, obviously, the Sex City second movie. They should just always be, you know,
locked
away
somewhere. No, those are good answers, yeah. I'm trying to think of ones that aren't the usual shows that we always go on about.
Yeah, that's it. You've got to think outside the box.
Yeah, I know. It's so tempting just to say Frasier.
oh God, yeah.
But
you can't just put the whole Frasier reboot in there.
Can we name and shame Nick DeSemley in here once again for giving the reboot series 4 stars?
We could always do that.
What?
2 stars too many.
Even I can't stand. I stand with Nick on a lot of stuff. That is just banana crackers.
That was whack.
Yeah, I think he wanted it to be 4-star show. We all did, you know, fans of the show. He's a big fan of the original show, like me. But I think, yeah, he
surely that's
the
reason to not
lost
get, on
judgmental
get on board with it.
Marbles.
Anyway,
can you think of another one, James? While I'm racking my brain,
I mean. Well, you know, I have this long-standing feeling that when, like, people always say, like, when you add to a mythology, like, you don't subtract from it; you're adding stuff to it, so it's not like a subtractive act. It doesn't reduce the quality of the stuff you've already seen. And I'm like, but that's just not true. Because when you add to a mythology, you are ultimately changing the nature of that whole universe. And if you make it worse, you have made everything in that universe worse. That's just a reality of it. Like, it is not possible now to watch the original Star Wars trilogy, for example, without thinking about the prequels and the sequels, because they feed into the larger narrative. So it fundamentally has effect. It doesn't, not the quality of the films, but how you understand the overall storyline. So yeah, I'm in denial about The Rise of Skywalker, for example.
Welcome to your TED Talk.
Right, exactly. you know, I'm sure if you were to, I'm sure if there was a bad episode of The Wheel, it would poison the overall world building of The Wheel's cinematic universe.
No.
And then,
although
you know, it wouldn't be the same.
They're standalone.
Exactly. Yeah.
Procedural. I wouldn't like
they're,
it.
They're single cogs.
Yeah.
Well, we've given answers. I think we can draw a veil.
Kay is bored of waiting for you, Boydie. Yeah. I think that's what that is.
I'm sensing that your answer really is Frasier, and we're not letting that happen.
No,
so
you can't. No, we're not allowing that.
I mean, let me just say, I did not get much advance notice of this question, so I could have racked my brain. You know, I'm not blaming you, Kay.
But... sounds a lot like you are.
I would ask you to reconsider. But,
okay.
Yeah. Yes, that's it. Thank you, Jenny, for writing, and we appreciate your message.
We'll have a think. get back to you next
but
time.
But I find it more interesting when, rather than like people saying, oh, I just pretend that doesn't exist, which does happen, is when the people who make these shows also come to the same conclusion. Again, from a, this is a film point of view, but Highlander 2 in particular, where they turn them all into aliens, and then no one ever speaks of that film again, and they pretend it didn't happen, and they just pick up from where they left off. I love that, when people realise how badly they've made a mistake, that they just erase it from existence.
Alien Earth, talking of aliens.
Dallas, for example, did that, didn't they?
Dallas, yeah.
Like, they were like, what the hell were we doing? Why did we kill Bobby Ewing?
Oh, yeah.
So he was in the shower.
Yeah. There was an. I really didn't like some of the latter episodes of Alien Earth. They slightly ruined the first half of that.
Yes, I remember you being wrong about this.
I admit it's a controversial view.
No, but actually, you know what?
This is my belated answer to the question.
Okay.
Is when you start having the xenomorph alien running around in broad daylight in the middle of wherever the fuck it is in Thailand or whatever, in Alien Earth, it kind of ruined it.
I mean, why?
It did.
Did you see too much of it?
Yeah, it shouldn't be in the, something, this is a little bit my corridor, it's my famous corridors complaint. It's all sunny and bright, and it's like, no.
Just to be absolutely, to be clear, this is the opposite of your complaint. There weren't enough corridors.
Exactly. Stick to the fucking dark corridors with the aliens in them, fine. But have it in broad daylight, you know, it's
very contrary.
Yeah.
Right, Mary.
Not enough corridors in Alien Earth.
Yeah. Absolutely.
To be fair, I had this conversation quite recently with my close personal friend James Cameron, and he was talking about aliens in particular, and we were talking about special effects. Mm. I was saying, you know, one of the reasons why Aliens hasn't really aged is because all the effects are practical, whereas Alien 3, for example, and Alien Resurrection have, because they were kind of nascent CGI and it hasn't aged at all well. And he was saying, it's interesting. And the question he said to me is like, the question I asked myself is, if I made Aliens now, I obviously would do it all in CGI because you would do, because those are the tools that are available now. He said, but would I have the same restraint I had when I made Aliens where I am keeping, because the reason I kept the Alien Queen in the shadows is because you put her in too bright, it's not look very good, right?
Yes.
Like, it's like, it would look a bit shit.
Indeed.
Whereas, he said, you know, now I could have the Queen walking through Times Square and she'd look fabulous. But he said, but would that be a good idea? He said, I would hope that I would still have the restraint to, even though that thing would look amazing, to keep it in the shadows, to keep it hidden.
That's Alien, the original, and best. It's all... Okay, so I'm literally nodding off. The original films, we're talking about films, it tied to TV, so it's fine. But the original best, you hardly saw the fucking aliens in the darkness. That's the genius of it, and it's like the shark in Jaws. The less you see about it, the better.
Anyway. For similar reasons, because it doesn't look very good.
Yeah.
But also, I would say, like, Alien, much like Jaws, they're horror-coded narratives. Alien Earth kind of isn't so much. Like, it's like, it has moments.
It is. It's
like,
best it is.
Certain episodes are very horror-coded.
Yeah, exactly. They're my favourite episodes.
But... not always. And the bits you're talking about later on, I would say the alien sequences there maybe aren't.
Indeed. This is all coming out now, okay, because I wasn't invited to the spoiler special.
Listen,
so I make no apologies.
You need an outlet. I get it.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. I think we have an answer. Okay, good.
Jenny, you did ask.
You did ask. More for you. Right, if you'd like your question addressed on this podcast, please send it in, pilottv@empiremagazine.com over the email. Super. Right, it's time for a guest. And it is the fabulous Ruth Wilson, who stars in this week's Down Cemetery Road as Sarah. And she's a woman who witnesses a bombing in Oxford and just cannot let it go, revealing a wider conspiracy. This is, of course, based on the book of the same name by Mick Slowhorses Heron, as he is known. And Emma Thompson's in it as well as the irascible PI Zoe Bohm, this particular series of books is based on. And Ruth chatted with Jordan, I think it was just yesterday, actually. And this is what happened.
It is my absolute pleasure to welcome to the Pilot TV podcast today the star of Apple TV's Down Cemetery Road, Ruth Wilson. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm good. This is a really great thing to be talking about, and it's been a real pleasure watching Down Cemetery Road as well. I think it took me about 7 minutes into the first episode before I knew I was hooked. There was a very explosive dinner party, and then before I knew it, I was 7 episodes into it. So I got hooked into it very, very quickly. How quickly did you realise that it was something that you thought this is going to be very good?
Well, when I first read the episode, I was sent the pilot episode. That's all they had at that time. And it was a page turner. And I was, you know, one of those, it's interesting, you get scripts and you're just sort of led by the story and the characters. And I thought, like all Mick Herron's work, Mawenna Banks, who adapted these scripts, she did an amazing job of sort of grabbing hold of his wit and his sense of humor, as long as making it into a really driving, exciting thriller, conspiracy thriller at the heart of it. So I knew that it had all those ingredients potentially to be a really great show, alongside having Emma Thompson in it as well, and the same team behind Slow Horses. So I kind of knew this had potential to be very exciting and potential to be a sort of binge watch show.
Yeah, I mean, it's never a bad thing if your starting point is based on a Mick Herron book and you're going to be starring opposite Emma Thompson. I did want to ask about that, because obviously I imagine everyone's asking you about working with Emma Thompson, because obviously it's Emma Thompson. But I wondered whether for you there's anything that you couldn't have known about her before you worked with her, in terms of whether there was something that surprised you about the way that she is as a performer, or about how she is as a person on set. Like, was there something that you've come away from doing season one and gone, oh, I'm really glad that I've gotten a chance to be close to her and find this out?
Yeah, I mean, I think you probably get that from how she is generally in interviews, and I'd come across her a few times personally, and she's very warm, she's very generous, she's really up for it, you know, and I think you probably get that from having watched her or, you know, seen her interviews. And she is exactly like that on set. Like, she's just really sort of gung-ho and very light with her work. Like, she enjoys finding the humor in things. She doesn't take it too seriously. She was up for all the kind of elements. I mean, it gets quite physical, this show, and there's lots of running and jumping and being shot at and being chased, and she does it all. So all those things, I think, was really exciting to be around. And we found a really, you know, we don't really come together as characters until episode 6, really. We sort of come across each other in the first 2 episodes, but then don't see each other again until then. So we had time to ground our characters before they came together. And that was quite smart in a way, because we both were sort of the dynamic duo could really explode at that point. We both knew who we were and who we were playing. So I loved working with her. And I thought, as soon as we two did find those scenes in episode 6, it was like, ah, this is the show. This is what we've been waiting for, is these two coming together and how they work together. But no, I loved working with her. There was a real lightness of touch with Emma, which I think everyone can probably imagine. It wasn't necessarily surprising, but it was really lovely to be working opposite that.
Yeah, and I mean, that must also be lovely, just that somebody is, you know, when someone is what you see is what you get, it removes any sort of artifice from everything before the performance. But I do also think that, I mean, obviously, like I say, a lot of people ask about working with Emma because it's Emma Thompson, she's fantastic. But you also do, in the sort of before episode 6, a lot of your character, Sarah's time, is actually spent with Nathan Stewart Jarrett, who is just, he's such an incredible actor. I first saw him in National Theatre's Angels in America. He's been in Femme very recently. But there's a really fascinating dynamic between Sarah and between Downey. And I just wondered, like, what was it like for you to be a scene partner with him as well? Like, how did you find working with Nathan?
It's really interesting, this show, because Sarah is sort of the straight person in the whole show. She's the one that has, in a way, least reason to be in this genre. And least reason to be in this show, full stop. She doesn't really fit in, you know. She's a normal person like you or me. So I found that every actor I came opposite, I sort of would bend to what they were doing. And tonally, it's quite an interesting show. You know, you have very funny scenes and very funny actors, and then you have very straight, serious moments. And Nathan came in with, you know, his character has got the most personal, I suppose, reason and most sort of heartbreaking reason in the show to be pursuing this girl. And his trauma is quite great, actually. So when he came on, it was like, okay, this is a different mode. This is where you sort of reveal Sarah's trauma too. And they have a really they build a bond. And I mean, you know, you see first he kidnaps her. So you're thinking, is he the baddie? And as it goes on, you realize they kind of create this bond and they have a shared mission, and she has to carry on the mission for him. So I think there's a real relationship that's formed over the course of the season and the series between the two of them, and he reveals her true trauma, and as does she to him. So they're able to listen to each other, they become friends, really, although they wind each other up. And Sarah certainly winds up Downey. I mean, she's just reckless. She shouldn't be there. She's sort of enjoying it somehow. She's enjoying this. This is the most exciting thing that's ever happened to her in her life. And for him, it's very, very serious. And the stakes are very, very high. So conflict is quite interesting to play out. But Nathan was brilliant. Again, I felt like I was a little bit, I had to be a sponge to all the different characters within the piece. As an actor, I had to sort of move to what they were giving me, because she was on the ride in a way. She was riding something. She's kind of in the driver's seat with her hands off the wheel. So everything else, she's kind of just riding a wave of everyone else.
It's a beautiful journey that Sarah goes on, though, because I feel like you've obviously got the sort of recognizably Mick Herron sort of mixture of thriller and there's comedy elements to it as well. And, you know, it is very twisty and turny. But then also I feel like over the course of the season, you've got this really beautiful sort of arc of self, not even self-discovery, but like self-rediscovery for Sarah, where it feels like when you meet her, she's this woman who has become perhaps encumbered by married life and by society's expectations. It's almost like she was never meant for that role. And so she's always been pushing out of those bounds. And then suddenly she finds herself in this, you know, quite juicy thriller, which obviously it's very dark, but at the same time, like, she's getting to go on car chases. She's riding a speedboat with Emma Thompson. Like, you know, she's living this extraordinarily sort of like high octane life all of a sudden. And it feels like she was always meant for that. And you've always struck me as an actor who's very daring and very sort of fearless in your work. I mean, I can't think of that many other actors that would do a 24-hour live theatre performance off the top of my head. But I just wondered, like, for you, is that something that you've had to learn to be fearless and learn to be daring? Or have you always had that sort of willing to jump into the oblivion, into the unknown?
No, I think it's instinctive. I think there's something that stuff strangely excites me. You know, I just, if when that offer of the 24-hour play came in, I was like, I have to do this. And it got cancelled or because of 2020. So, you know, it's COVID. So we didn't do it. And I was insistent that was the one thing of all the things that got cancelled and stopped. That was the one thing that I had to pursue to do. So we made it happen sort of 3 years later. But yeah, that sort of excites me. Putting myself in as much jeopardy as a character is kind of interesting to me. And it's also just, I'm interested in myself in those circumstances, what I do, how I cope with those, what happens to me, how I can perform in those environments. So I'm as much interested in character as I am in form or kind of experience for me, really. So that's, you know, I look for work that can push me character-wise, but also is sort of making me go through something different personally. I'm learning from it. So that, I think that's why I'm drawn to stuff like that.
Yeah, which makes it sort of interesting then as well, that obviously, like, you've been in quite a few book adaptations. So, like, your career sort of started with Jane Eyre, and you've done His Dark Materials, you've done True Things. Like, you're not a stranger to a sort of book to screen adaptation. So is your process then, because if you are looking to sort of push borders and push boundaries with yourself as an actor, but also with these characters, do you tend to be quite sort of studious when it comes to reading all the material, really sort of drilling into everything that you can find? Or do you tend to try and go in blind and then sort of explore things as you go? Or does it vary project to project?
It varies, actually. I am quite studious. I'm a history student, really. So I love doing the research. That's one of my favourite parts of any job. But some jobs don't require it. And actually, you know, that 24-hour play, I couldn't prepare at all. It was about turning up and just being. And actually, funnily enough, in this job on Slow Horses, the adaptation is quite different from the book. You know, the book was written 25 years ago, and Morwenna Banks and the team felt they wanted to modernize and update and give Sarah, make her a bit more of a modern woman. So they gave her a job. She didn't have a job in the original books. The relationship with her husband is not so controlling in the books. It's quite dark and controlling, and she's been given pills by her husband all the time. So it's definitely a different vibe. So I felt the books weren't as useful to me in this version. So I kind of had to remove myself from the books and find her as I went. And I did, strangely, discover Sarah as we went, because it wasn't on the initial page, you know, how she I found as the show went, like I was saying about those dynamics of different characters, I found, oh, wow, she sort of has real lack of confidence in her own abilities. So when she's with someone else, like when she's with Zoe Bowen or she's with Nathan's character, Downey, or she's even with the child, she lets them sort of lead because she prefers to be sort of in the shadows. Even though she sort of elbows her way out a few times, she sort of puts herself in second position. But when she's on her own, she's pretty good and she's actually quite effective and smart. So I was like, oh, she's like that. She sort of takes second role. She's at the beta or beta. She's happy for someone else to be alpha, but really she's pretty good on her own. And that comes from a lack of self-confidence. So as the show goes on, she becomes more confident on her own. And I thought, ah, I found that as the show went, that wasn't something I had decided upon early on. And so this was quite different actually in performance. So every role, sometimes like Mrs. Coulter is so clear on the page and we added scenes. So we definitely fleshed her out as the show went on. But Philip Pullman had made such an extraordinary villain, you know, and created such an amazing character that that was like next to me. That book was next to me as I was performing. And the same with Jane Eyre, you know, it was my diary. It was like, I'd look into it all the time as I was performing Jane Eyre. So it depends on the material, it depends on the adaptation. It's all very different processes each time.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. And I mean, you touched on Mrs. Coulter there, and I am talking to you just a few days after Philip Pullman's The Rosefields just come out, which I literally finished just yesterday. A very emotional read. Have you had a chance to read it yourself yet?
I haven't
is
yet.
Is it on the pile to be read?
It's my pile that's here, but yeah, it's amazing. He's such an extraordinary writer, and he's given so, he knows, I don't know. It's such a it was such an amazing honor to be part of his Dark Materials and to be part of his world. And he's given so much to so many people through that book. I reread them recently for an audio book. They sort of did the rereadings, and I did all three. To his Dark Materials and the Amber Spyglass, and I have to say it was the most extraordinary thing going back to those books and rereading them in that detail and density. Because obviously I was playing Mrs. Coulter, so I'd be looking through. I'd read it, but I was like, right, focused on the scenes that she's in. Whereas this, I read the whole thing and I thought, God, he's an extraordinary writer. And the way they're so emotional, those books, they're so philosophical. They deal with what being human is. I just think they're spectacular, and every child and every person should read them, actually.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I'm going to have to let you go in just a moment, but and it's been so lovely getting to talk with you. But obviously there are further books in the Down Cemetery Road series and the Zoe Bowen mysteries, as you will. I'm going to assume it feels like the enthusiasm is there to do more of this if the opportunity comes. Would you like to carry on going on this journey with Sarah and with Zoe if you get the chance?
Yeah, I think, like you said, we only had four episodes, Emma and I, really. So I think there's so much more to investigate with their relationship and dynamic and what that might be. And I'm intrigued. I mean, yes, if there's an appetite for it, if people watch the show and love it, then there will be another season. And I'm really excited about what Moena comes up with, because in the books, again, it will have to be slightly adapt from the books and move away from what the books are a little bit. But I'm really excited to see what that is. And I think there is a lot more juice to be found between Zoe and Sarah. So I think there's space for that, and forward to seeing what they come up with if you'll watch it.
Well, I very much hope that everybody does. And I feel like it would be very much in the spirit of the books if there was an improvisational approach needed to be taken with future series. Thank you very much for your time, and best of luck with the release.
Lovely to speak to you.
That was Ruth Wilson. Time now for this week's news.
There's only one place to start.
Go on.
Tell us.
The BBC has confirmed the future of Doctor Who.
Oh, okay. Yeah, of course.
And there's going to be, because we've been waiting for this, basically since, you know, towards the end of the last season with Shooter Gatwa, quitting as the Doctor or whatever, and Billy Piper arriving almost as the, is she the new Doctor? What the fuck does it all mean? Ever since that happened, we've been waiting to see whether they'd recommission with Disney, because obviously Disney Plus money has been a huge part of its revival of the last couple of seasons in the second Art Russell T Davies era. They've confirmed that Disney Plus will no longer be involved as a production partner, but that doesn't mean it's over. And of course, the BBC is carrying on with Doctor Who itself and has confirmed that there'll be a Christmas special next year, 2026, written by Russell T. Davies. And it's very good news, because people were worried that, you know, once you pump that amount of extra money into a show, you know, I think Russell is so clever at these things that he'll make it work with a lesser budget, no doubt. Yeah. I'm sure it won't. They won't match the budget. It'd be almost impossible to do so. But you've got that, and you've got The War Between the Land and the Sea, which is the spin-off, the kind of prime time.
Is that the Tovey one?
The Tovey starring, indeed, Russell Tovey, friend of the pod, and Gugu and Bartha Raw. And that,
love.
Indeed. Brilliant. And that is going to arrive earlier than thought. We thought it might be on at Christmas originally. Then it was like going to be back to next year. And now it's going to be on early-ish December on the BBC
One. What a birthday treat for you, Boydo.
Hugh is literally, I think, going to go out. I'm guessing. I can't say for sure, because that would be outrageous of me and probably illegal as far as the BBC is concerned. But I think it's going to go out right near my birthday. Yeah, which is listeners, December the 9th.
So are you inviting all listeners to your house to watch it?
No, if you want to send any
800
gifts
screen.
Or, yeah, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Gifts. What do you give the man who's got everything?
I'm not saying, by the way, let me clarify, I'm not saying it's going to start on my birthday. It's definitely be around then.
But it's just a general present for you from Russell.
I think so. Yeah, I think we can see it that way. So. Can't we?
You deserve it.
Yeah. That's interesting. So a year, we have a year until mainline Doctor Who returns.
But do you know what? I think fans, who fans are relieved, because it could have been longer, really.
Could, yeah.
You know, considering how long these things take to make, etc. You know, that's, it's fine.
Well, obviously it would have been if he was doing, like, the next thing was a full season, presumably. But it'd be interesting to see how noticeable the budget shift is.
Yeah, well.
Because, I mean, it must be difficult to go back. Like, once you've had a massive cash injection and you've got all this, like, all these funds at your disposal, to then have to think, okay, how are we going to do this?
Or, conversely, does it take the pressure off a little bit, and does it give him the opportunity to be even more creative? Because, you know, maybe. That's maybe an exciting prospect.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, I mean, so it's almost like a cliche to say, but it's true that some of the greatest Doctor Who episodes of since it was revived have been among the cheapest and least kind of high concept, didn't involve spectacular sets and VFX, etc. They've been, you know, the more simple
New
ones.
Who.
Yeah,
New Who.
New Who.
Very good. Okay, well, that kind of is the big news from this week, isn't it?
I think so.
Well,
other things have happened, haven't they, Kay?
Yes, a couple of things I wanted to mention, which is that Only Murders is coming to the UK.
So it's been commissioned.
It's going on tour.
No, it's going to be commissioned for the sixth season, and now it's going to be set in the UK when season six comes.
So hang on. So it's not even. Not only is it Murders in the building. It's not even Only Murders in the country at this point. Yeah. This is what you're saying.
No. Well, it'll be Only Murders in another building in London, presumably. Yeah.
Maybe it'll be.
What's the setup?
I don't know. No other
All
details
said
really.
Is,
have been
it's,
revealed.
It's moving. They're moving to London. I'm going to guess. My guess is, I read the story. I thought, oh, that's interesting. I bet they visit London, go on holiday to London for some reason or other. One of them's maybe got a job in London or something.
In a hotel,
they stay in a hotel. Exactly. I think it'll be set in a grand, you know, like the Ritz or whatever, or Claridge's or something like that. That
one
kind
of your
of place.
Locales.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. I'm there all the time, constantly living in the suite on top of Claridge's for 30,000 quid a night. Yeah, that's me. So I think my guess is that's how it'll be roughly, yeah. But I think it's a good move.
Yeah, it freshens things up.
We've forgotten about this season. It's just, you know, I haven't watched it. I've stopped watching it. Not deliberately, just out of time constraints. But I really enjoyed the season. As far as I got to, I got to about halfway through.
A return to form, I thought.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I have absolutely nothing to add to that, because I don't care.
No, I know. Yeah. I know. Yeah.
Okay.
Something,
sorry. Just to confirm.
Yeah.
Something we do care about. We all love Fawlty Towers, and I just wanted to mention the fact Prunella Scales sadly passed away at the age of 93.
93.
Which is obviously devastating news. And I was just reading about it this morning, and the statement said from her son Samuel and Joseph that she died peacefully at her home in London. And apparently they added that she was watching Fawlty Towers the day before she died.
Oh, what an incredible thing to know. Yeah, that's brilliant.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
She was so good. Sybil Fawlty, absolute legend.
There is no Basil without Sybil.
No, she was
There's
fantastic.
No show without.
She, now, Ramon, she wasn't at when we went to the opening night, when Bordy and I went on our mandate to the opening night of the Fawlty Towers play, which we weren't invited to, okay? Obviously, John Cleese was there.
Yeah.
But it was anyone else there? I don't think Brunella's Scouts and Connie Booth were there, were they? I don't think so. We couldn't see, because he was up in the box. We could hear him, because he said a few words. We could hear him, but we couldn't see the box from where we were sitting. Because we were obviously sitting with Michael Palin and, you know.
Yeah, Palin was there.
That's right, and Terry Gilliam.
I think she had been ill for quite a while, Brunella Scales. But what we saw in recent years, she did a show documentary series about her and her husband, Timothy West's love of canal, journeys by canal. And there were some beautiful insights into their life together. And she was kind of ill, you know, in some of those, or at least, didn't hide the fact that, you know, she wasn't perfectly well, if you like. So I don't think she would have been at the...
Yeah.
It says that she was diagnosed with vascular dementia in 2013. Right. So a long time.
The brilliant thing about the show, they carried on making the show.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't stop just because you're suffering from dementia. Yeah, and it was absolute delight. Those series are a delight to watch. But Fawlty Towers, I mean, it's one of the greatest comedic characters in history.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Without a doubt. In other personality-related news, Taylor Sheridan.
Yes, this is interesting.
Yeah, he said Paramount must be having some frantic meetings here. They've lost Taylor Sheridan to Universal.
Mm.
So he signed an overall deal with them. Obviously, Yellowstone is the biggest thing he's ever created, but he's had his finger in a lot of pies. It does sometimes feel a lot like Paramount Plus is the Taylor Sheridan network. So this has got to be a bit of a blow for them.
Yeah, and coincides with obviously the news that they've been making loads of layoffs as well.
Yeah.
So it's a bad week for Paramount.
Yeah, not great. Not great at all.
What's interesting, though, it fits into a whole, because Paramount is trying to buy Warner Brothers Discovery, aren't they, in America, which is this huge, controversial, and there's a kind of like a, I don't want to say in quotes, right-wing kind of bosses of that channel now. They're trying to basically run half of America's TV and media with whole connections to Donald Trump, etc. It's a huge, big thing going on, basically, the possible takeover of, you know, this kind of iconic TV and film brand. And this is happening in the middle of it all, adds a whole frisson they couldn't keep hold of. Paramount couldn't keep hold of. It's by far its most valuable creator. And there were stories I was reading in some of the Hollywood press, kind of alleging that, you know, he decided to leave them because they started sending him notes, you know, about stuff.
Mm.
And because certain...
He seems to have got by quite well without
them.
So
he's done fine, isn't he? Yeah, he's created some of their... Obviously, pretty much all their biggest hits. And he was saying the new regime came in and started questioning, I think they snubbed one of his ideas, show ideas, blah, blah, blah. Because pretty much every show he's ever done has done brilliantly well in that Paramount era. So it's I think the whole thing's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you.
Good. did you see the White Lotus news?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Très bien.
Yeah, mais oui. Yeah,
très
very
bien.
Exciting. It's going to be based in Paris and the French Riviera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited about the Riviera.
No, yeah, totally. So.
It's good. It's good for me to know where I'm going to be going next for my next visit to a White Lotus.
Oh, so, you know, gosh.
After my stay in the Thailand White Lotus.
Yeah, and I'd quite like a set visit as well.
We can all fight. They should just throw the set visit into the middle of the equivalent.
Or do we all go, Boydo? Rather than dividing us, why don't we just all club together? Because the thing is, it's cheaper to go to France than it is... getting us to go to any of the other locations.
To be fair, James didn't actually visit the set of The White Lotus. He went on some ludicrous...
That's what I was saying.
I simply stayed at The White Lotus.
He went on some ludicrous junket involving a Jurassic Park film, to my knowledge.
That is correct.
Whereas Beth Webb, formerly of this very podcast, did visit the set.
Yes, for season two.
Actual White Lotus.
And that was the Italian one?
She
recorded an episode of this podcast from The White Lotus.
And she was kind of stranded there because wasn't there like a storm or
something? Wasn't there something COVID related as well going on there?
That's right.
But either way, I remember she was stuck at The White Lotus for a while. She was clearly very upset.
Yeah. So Beth's got the power, I'm saying. You know, I think we've formed an orderly queue behind Beth, and then we'll see who's going. We could suggest doing a special podcast, you know, from live from the French Riviera, but who knows whether we'll get it passed. I don't know.
Okay, can someone green light that? Get in touch. You know the email address. Thanks very much.
There's some Philip Barantini news.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That he's going to be doing a new show with Adam Driver.
Mm.
And this is Rabbit Rabbit. And it's a bit of a Dog Day Afternoon type thing where...
Dogs Rabbit? What?
Not literal dogs. But it's essentially a heist that turns into a hostage situation, a kind of siege situation. Will it be a oneer? I don't know.
Well, I interviewed him for this very podcast.
Yeah.
I've used the phrase "this very podcast" a lot today. Sorry. But I did. Around the time of Adolescence, we did a special interview with him, like a half-hour interview. And he was very aware of not wanting to be, in quotes, typecast as a director of just the master, even though he is the master of the one take, of the one shot thing. But so I doubt very much.
Impact.
Yeah, my guess is this won't be, a one shot show.
Yeah.
But it's a great project and brilliant for him. He's so hugely admired now. He's also a really, really great bloke as well, which I think helps.
Endorsed by Boyd.
Endorsed by
Boyd. I mean, what more could you really want?
Hey, we all live for
Well, it. Presumably from your point of view, to have him on the wheel. Is the wheel done as a oneer? Could it be?
I bet Stephen Graham would do the wheel.
Oh, yeah.
He would do it. He's up for a laugh.
I think, Hannah. Hannah, his wife, would be fantastic.
She'd be good on it as well. Correct. Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah. Can I personally mention the fact that, Ryan Murphy, I am often critical of Ryan Murphy, and most recently we reviewed Monster, which he didn't actually have any.
No, he had nothing to do with it.
He was busy doing All's Well with Kim Kardashian, etc., which he did write, direct, and produce, and of which I have seen the first episode. But it is heavily embargoed. Heavily embargoed to tomorrow, the day after we come out, annoyingly, with this podcast. But I'm sure we'll get around to reviewing it eventually. But Ryan Murphy is doing his next big project, is his adaptation of The Shards, the Bret Easton Ellis novel, one of my favourite novels of the last 10 years. It's an absolute work of genius that started out as Bret telling the story on his own podcast week by week, and you didn't know whether
it was... Oh, you told us about this before.
Yeah, it's a genius, an absolute genius. The whole thing was incredible because you didn't know where... The main character is called Bret and is based completely on his life going to...
Would you recommend we read the book before we watch?
Not necessarily, because... No, but...
I mean, it's no Wheel of Time, is it?
What is? But I think... This is a really good match. Funnily enough, Brent Easton Ellis on his own podcast has discussed it, saying, he's just going to let them do whatever they want to do. But I think Ryan Murphy's sensibility, over the top, kind of slightly kitsch camp sensibility, matches what happens in The Shards. So it's set in the 80s. It's all about, like, is there or isn't there a serial killer amongst this crowd of teenagers, glamorous teenagers who are completely privileged? It's drama, kind of like drama/thriller. There'll be a thriller element, because there's a serial killer element to it. But it's not all about the serial killer. It's just almost like a side issue. It's just a portrayal of young people.
Serial killer side note.
Exactly. It's a portrayal of young people growing up in the early 80s in California, and I loved it, and can't wait to see this show. Anyway, the news was that Wes Bentley has been cast in it, and he will play the father of one of the main teenage girl characters.
Good signing for you?
Very good signing, because that character is key as well. The character he's playing is key in the novel. Anyway, I'm the only person who cares about The Shards, so,
you've got me excited for it.
Yeah. I think someone mentioned it actually in an email. There was a listener who, or someone DM'd me or something about it, so yeah, that's partly why I mentioned it.
Okay,
yes.
Is that it for news?
Yes.
I think so.
We're done. Let's move on to this week's reviews. Where should we begin? Let's begin with Down Cemetery Road, which you've already heard a fair bit about from Ruth Wilson herself. This is, of course, based on Mick Herron's Zoe Boehm novels and brought to the screen by Morwenna Banks. Now, there are a lot of questions people probably have about this one, but the most pressing one on all our minds is probably whether this can hold a candle to Slow Horses. Who wants to field that particular question?
Ooh, that's a big one. Go on, Boydo.
Okay, I will. Morwenna Banks indeed is the showrunner. She worked on Slow Horses as well, but she took time out to be in charge of this particular show, this adaptation, as you say, of the Mick Herron. This was his first novel, I think. Before he did Slow Horses, he wrote this book.
And there are a few, aren't there?
Yeah, and they became their
Zoe
own
Boehm books.
A series of books featuring the character played by Emma Thompson, private detective. I think this is, so I have to say, I have put my cards on the table. This is like, if you came up with a project and said, a dream project for you, all the different elements of it. You've got Dame Emma Thompson and Ruth Wilson. Emma Thompson, absolute all-round legend. And I never forget to mention, when we were discussing Emma Thompson, that I did host a BAFTA Life in Pictures with Emma Thompson for 90 minutes on stage at BAFTA in front of hundreds of people. And it's almost like a weird dream that I can't believe actually happened. I think BAFTA must have made some kind of mistake that they got me to do it.
No. When
they
could have gone
through her whole career.
Yeah, going through her whole career. 90 minutes. You should have been, you know, Jonathan Ross or Edith Bowman doing it. Boydie, it was fucking me.
As I recall, you and I did a film quiz once with Emma Thompson. Do you remember this?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Oscar Moore film quiz.
Yeah.
I believe her team beat ours, but let's not talk about that.
I think you're right, yeah. But she was, can you imagine? I mean, she's literally my all-time favourite actress. She's a fucking legend. And yeah, ooh. I did that with her. And she was brilliant. And she's absolutely fantastic in this show. You've got her, Ruth Wilson, who I love as well, mm-hmm. as heard on the interview. The Mick Herron factor, that's from Mick Herron books, and he's obviously a genius because Slow Horses is brilliant.
Yep.
Moena Banks is fantastic, talent as well, legendary. And the cast, not only those two, but Tom Riley, who's really funny as Ruth Wilson's character's prick of a husband. Mm. I use that word advisedly.
Real big bell-end energy.
Total mm-hmm. bell-end. Adil Akhtar is in it in a hilarious role in which he kind of gets bullied around by his
He's sort of like
superior.
An ineffectual intelligence agent, isn't
exactly,
he?
Exactly. And the title sequence is absolutely beautiful. It's got this animated kind of art, because she's an art restorer. That's her job, Ruth Wilson's character.
And you'll know that because it's in the very first scene and then never mentioned again at any point during the show.
100%.
Well, she's busy with stuff that isn't her job, right?
Exactly.
She's got her hands full.
Anyway, it's just got everything. It's like, this is the ultimate catnip for me, and I didn't feel let down. I think it's not perfect. I think it's slightly slower than Slow Horses. Obviously, you're going to compare it to Slow Horses. Slower than Slow Horses. And it's 8 parts rather than 5 or 6 that Slow Horses usually is. So it's a longer, and I think that's partly why it's slower. And I think there is more than enough story, and the characters are so fascinating and brilliant to be with, particularly Emma Thompson's character, who's absolutely genius. But some might say, you could say that, you know, it could get to certain points quicker than it does, I would say. Mm-hmm. But what I love about it is, and I've watched half of the series, is I've got the whole thing and I'm holding myself back from finishing the whole thing, is that each episode has loads of things going on, and then they almost, so far, they reach a crescendo and there's a huge big twist at the end of most of the episodes.
There's always a cliffhanger.
And some of those cliffhangers are brilliant. And I it may be just me, because I don't often see twists coming, and I didn't see hardly any of them coming. So I completely...
How many have you watched, sorry?
I've watched 4 out of the 8, literally half of it. What I would say is the thing that happens at the beginning of, at the end of episode 2 and then the beginning of episode 2. Episode 2 begins with a scene, and I'll describe it as a confrontation between Emma Thompson's character and the police. It's one of my favourite scenes of the year. I think it's so brilliantly done. The writing, Emma Thompson's at the peak of her powers, and the police characters are hilarious slash totally authentic. The police woman character in the scene, I think, is genius. And I don't know, I didn't note down the actress's name, I should have done, but she's so good. And it kind of reflects a little bit on kind of the British police being different too. Like, you couldn't imagine an American police person or whatever being as she is. But I absolutely loved that sequence that opens episode 2. And if you want to sum up what I think, this is a pretty fantastic show that I absolutely love, that scene sums it up for me. It's just the writing, the direction, the acting, the characters. It's fantastic. It's an object lesson in how to do, for me, a kind of Rolls Royce of a TV show in this podcast is all about, this kind of project. And it's like, this is peak TV has given us this kind of thing, and I love it, and I'm really enjoying it. I think it's fantastic. Opinions may differ, apparently.
Oh, I agree.
I disagree to an extent, but that's not to say I don't like the show. And just to kind of underscore that, I've watched, I think, 5 episodes of this. So if I didn't like it, I would not have sunk 5 hours into it. So just to be clear, I am enjoying this show. It is very Moorish. I will say one of the reasons I've watched 5 episodes is because the cliffhangers do keep you going. So, oh, God,
exactly.
I'm going to have to watch another one.
Just when you think, you can come back, they draw you back in.
Yeah. I mean, it's not as good as Slow Horses. Like, we should just get that out there. There are a number of reasons for that, I think. I think part of it is that the show, while it's interesting and it's very twisty-turny, and some of the twists you will not see coming, because some of them are just batshit.
Yeah.
But for me, it's uneven. And the reason I say it's uneven is because, so this is the first of the Zoe Bohm books, but it's not a Zoe Bohm TV show. Like, Emma Thompson, she's a co-lead, but she's not the main lead. Like, it's not about her. It's as much about Ruth Wilson's character. Mm. And those two characters spend most of this show separated. So they don't share a lot of screen time together. And so their stories kind of move at slightly different speeds and slightly different tones. And weirdly for this one, I think the tonality of this didn't work for me. I'm back on tones again.
Why not?
It's okay for 2 reasons. I think one, And on the one hand, like, Slow Horses is like this as well. So Slow Horses is grounded in reality, but it is intrinsically comic all the way through. It doesn't take itself too seriously, but it takes itself just seriously enough. I think the subject matter here is occasionally quite a bit darker than Slow Horses, but the tone is very flippant and very light. And so I kind of struggle with that
similar.
A little bit.
That's similar, though.
There's a similarity, but it's not quite the same. But I think the problem that I have is Adil Akhtar's character is just in a different show to everyone else, because his scenes are so 100% played for comedy from top to bottom. They are just comedic. It's not comedic, comedy, drama. It's just comedy. So whenever you switch to him, it's like you flip the channel and we're in a sitcom. And that's not any shade at Adil Akhtar, who is a fantastic actor and I have loads of time for him. But it got to the point where I started to dislike all of his scenes. And again, not because they're bad, because actually they're genuinely quite funny. But it just didn't gel for me with the rest of the show. So that's why, I mean, when I said it's uneven, it felt like there were three different shows going on, and two of the shows, even though they felt slightly different, I was really enjoying. And that third show, I kind of wasn't. And like I say, I've watched 5 hours of this. I'm going to watch the rest of it. I am enjoying it. It is a good show. But I think that's, for me, Slow Horses was always a very high bar to clear. But I was just like, I like this, but I don't like it as much as I want to like it. But as you said, like, Emma Thompson and Ruth Wilson, both fantastic in this. And Emma Thompson's character is enormous fun. Like, it's, you know, if you were being reductive, you could say you can see the template for Slow Horses forming in this storyline where, you know, her character, like, you can see, it's not
she
a
has
million
much better
miles
hygiene
away.
Than,
yeah, she does have better hygiene, but there's a lot of, like, sort of like nascent Jackson Lamminess about her at times. Yeah. So you can see where that character came from. And I guess in that way, you could say Ruth Wilson has a little bit of River Cartwright in her. But so yeah, like the show, but was a little disappointed that it didn't reach the kind of lofty heights that I was hoping.
Sounds to me the problem with the tonal shifts.
I mean, to a certain extent, there was a tonal shift issue for me.
As we know, there was a tonal shift issue for me. Okay, it's just an invalid criticism. At the end of the day,
that was my invalid opinion. I'm so sorry.
What about you?
I really enjoyed this, and one of the main reasons that I really like seeing Emma Thompson in this acid tongue, you know, very brusque, abrasive role. And I think she played that really well. She seemed to be having a lot of fun with it. I love Ruth Wilson. So, I mean, the cast is exceptional. We haven't even mentioned Darren Boyd, who's great as this sort of condescending civil servant who is in a lot of the scenes that James is referring to with Adil Akhtar. I do get what you mean about those being played for laughs, but I didn't have as much of an objection. I'm not a tonal tyrant. I was fine with that.
And I think I am. But, you know, you could very, very easily make the point that the Claude Whelan sequences in the most recent two seasons of Slow Horses are also very comedically played, but I think because they're grounded by Kristin Scott Thomas, they never lapse completely into comedy. They always fall within the boundaries of this is just funny drama. And I think here those particular scenes just took it a little too far into the comedy realm for me. And for me, because the subject matter is actually quite serious in places, it pulled me out of the story.
I think it's such a fine line with you, though, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm a demanding master with these things.
But overall, I enjoyed it for the emotional complexity of the two lead ladies. There's so much depth to them, and they're so knotty, and played excellently by Ruth and Emma.
And I would say, I think that you mentioned how they don't have many scenes together, which is true. But what I think, I totally support that, because what that means is that when they do have a scene together, it's absolutely fire. It's that you look so. I look forward so much to those moments. There's one towards the end of episode two, we're on the roof together, and it's just fantastic. And so then back, and I think it's brilliant. You don't want to give too much of that, because, you know, it makes it feel much more special when they are together and they're bouncing off each other, because that works so well. So I completely am on board with that. There's a brilliant, I know what you mean about Adil Akhtar's character. It is a comedic performance, but in the way that some of the supporting cast in Slow Horses are comedic,
but grounded. Roddy Ho is a good example of a character. He's quite extreme, but
we've all
met bellends like that. And even though he is a comedy character, he is still entirely believable within the world of the show, whereas Adil Akhtar's character, I don't think is.
I didn't have a problem with him at all. And in fact, he has some of the best lines. He has a line, he says at one point, yes, he's a psychopath, not in a good way, which I thought was a great line. And he also bounces off the character played by Amos, who I won't say too much about because he's a twisted within himself. It's played by Fehinti Balogun, who is brilliant. but they have scenes together, and they're not that comedic.
Well, they're so one-sided comedy. In that case, obviously, the Amos character is playing the straight guy.
Yeah,
and Adil Attar's playing clowning it a little bit.
No, I don't think.
But when
I
he's playing across C, who's the kind of his boss character?
Oh, I know those scenes. Are,
it's just comedy. They're both playing comedy.
Again, I think it's fine. As we know, I just don't. I'm just not bothered about those tone shifts. I think it incorporates.
You're a tonal maverick.
It incorporates different tones really well, and then you don't, just stop worrying about it. Just enjoy it for what it is.
It takes me out of it.
Just kind of relax. I need, dude.
Yeah, that's it.
Listeners, don't be put off by this. Please watch it.
Find my T-shirt before the next.
Come, episode. Tell us what you thought. Like, write in, because I genuinely want to see.
Very intriguing.
How people got on with this. Because, like I say, liked it, didn't love it. We'll watch the rest of it. I'll be curious what people think.
Yeah.
Down Cemetery Road, which I believe is already airing as we go out on Apple TV.
Yes, correct. This is now streaming.
Now streaming.
Yeah.
All right. Next up this week, we have I Love LA on Sky, on A Sky. I don't know which Sky. Sky Comedy. Hey! This is a show created by Rachel Sennett of Shiver Baby and Bottoms fame, and it stars Rachel Sennett of Shiver Baby and Bottoms fame, and it features a group of friends reuniting and coming together to do things as a group, which is ironic, really, given that only one of us was actually able to see this show, because despite Boydie telling us, Kay, that he had requested screeners for us, he told... Now, we have no evidence to support this.
You're
like
lying.
Boydie, I think it's a bit like the calendar update that you supposed to
No. Did you retcon it, Boydie?
Did you ask after the fact?
No, I'm not letting you get away with this grotesque slur. did you not have emails yourselves from... You
yes,
did, though.
I did.
Thank you.
I got no email.
I got an email back and said I would receive them, and I did not.
Oh, I didn't even get any email.
But you also...
That's because you're blacklisted.
Checking the wrong portal anyway.
Admittedly, but I did finally check the right one.
You can't blame Boydie for being a moron.
No, that's true. That is true. That is 100% true, but I did check the right one in the end, and it wasn't.
Long and short, Boyd's the only one who's watched.
Do you know what? It's a real shame, seriously.
Did you love LA, Boyd?
I did love LA. And what's the real shame about that you two have not seen this is because it's a really interesting talking point. This will spur. This is going to have lots of conversations are going to.
Why?
Because it's a lot to deal with. It's like
in what sense?
Okay, so I
because a setup on paper sounds quite fluffy, doesn't it?
Oh, it's not fluffy.
Okay,
it's anything but fluffy.
It's fluff free.
It's totally fluff free. It's particularly going to be a challenge for you.
Oh, great!
Absolutely, 100%. It is. What I'm about to say, I'm slightly reluctant because I don't want to be accused of being
tonal shift.
Not tonal shifts. It reminds. Think of it as Girls.
Yes,
but. Absolutely. However long ago Girls was, must be talking what, like 10, 15 years ago?
Longer.
Yeah, more maybe, yeah. This is like ratcheted up to the max, reflecting, I think, changes in society and in behaviour by younger people since Girls. It would be like, imagine Girls, but now they are all now influencers, or if they're not actual influencers, then they're dealing with influencers on a daily basis.
I instantly want to watch this.
Yeah. And they're living their lives of unbelievable shallowness. Like, if you think that Girls was partly Lena Dunham's comment on the shallowness and self-absorption of her generation, then, oh my God, you haven't seen anything yet with this lot. They are a bunch of fucking idiots a lot of the time, but they're really, really funny. It's more out and out. You know how, again, I can keep going to Girls, but I do think there's a lot of the DNA of Girls in it, because it is about a group of women, mostly, but plus Jordan Firstman's character, who plays gay guy, their gay best friend, Charlie, is genius in it. He steals the show. I mean, he's incredible. He's a writer, producer, film director himself, and he's so funny. He plays a stylist to this pop star, and having brushed myself sometimes, so you know when you go, same with you, Kay, but we've all been to interviews with celebrities or film stars or TV stars, and there's always stylists there.
Oh my God, yes.
And often...
I've got one in mind.
There you go, right? You know, often dealing with the stylist. Some of my best friends are stylists, by the way, so I'm not dissing
them. Oh my God, what a line, Boyd. Yeah. I can't
believe
you said that.
But it's so brilliantly observed what happens between him, this stylist character, and his client, the pop star, particularly in episode two. It's fucking brilliant. So it's
Does the stylist in this believe they are the talent as well?
It's more that the client is really treats him like absolute shit.
Oh, okay, fine.
And
that dynamic.
He doesn't. Yeah, it's like he's not innocent at all himself. He is a complete twat as well. But it's like everyone is. We're going to be discussing when both of you have finally watched this thing, and you have to watch it. Are any of the characters likable? That old chestnut is going to come up because they are all unbelievably self-absorbed.
It fails the Belen test.
Totally fails the Belen test. These are unashamed, absolute 100% Belens. But it's like the main character, Rachel Sennett's character, is a lot to deal with. Then you meet her best friend or her frenemy character, who is played by Odessa. I believe you pronounce it as Ion, as Tallulah. You know who she is, Kate?
I recognise the name.
Pamela Adlon's daughter. She's Pamela Adlon's daughter, yeah, of Better Things fame.
Oh, wow.
Right. And then the other character, who is Alani, is played by True Whitaker. And do you know who she is? She is Forrest Whitaker's daughter.
Wow.
So there's a whole Nepo baby. And to be fair to them, they've talked about it in interviews. Like, there's literally populated by Nepo babies. For all I know, Jordan Furstman might have famous parents as well. I don't know. But it's all part of the whole LA vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of works, right? And anyway, Odessa's character, Tula, she is unbearable. She's literally, she screams. It's one of those things I've seen these people. Remember when I went to the premiere of the Kim Kardashian show?
Yeah.
There were literally people screaming at each other on the red carpet going, mm-hmm. That's how young people enjoy it. I would almost say a complete old twat. But you know what I mean? I've noticed recently that people of a certain age, younger people than us, include all of us here, you know, people
how
in their late teens, early 20s, mid-20s, whatever, they shout a lot, just shouting at each other, you know, in the street or, you know, and it's just a higher volume than I think we are at our age.
You've
and
never show, sounded more middle-aged.
I know, but this show reflects all of that. They're constantly shouting at each other, literally screaming.
I cannot wait to see this.
But it's hilarious. I thought it was so funny. It's definitely erring more on the side of out-and-out comedy than Girls that I keep comparing it to. And it gets some brilliant laughs. And it's because of the over-the-topness of these characters, particularly the Odessa character, Tallulah, you will find her excruciating. I don't think you'll be able to watch it, James. It's my guess. And Josh Hutcherson is genius casting as Rachel Sennett's character's boyfriend, who is like this kind of like lovely, sweet, harmless, but kind of nothing. Just like a dude who's like quite handsome, but not too handsome. Do you know what I mean? The whole thing rings totally true if you ever spent any time in LA. And it's partly about that. It's about, I think, really, and hence the title, you kind of love being there in a way because it's such an outrageous place to be in terms of the whole place is enthralled to Hollywood still now and to people who want to be famous and all of that. And yet at the same time, it's horrendous and disgusting and you feel dirty being there for too long at the same time. And it's grappling with that, I think, this show. And it even, I could go on banging on about it too much, but it's named after the Randy Newman song, I Love, I Love. You know that song? It's a classic song. And halfway through the first episode, they just play that song and have a montage with ridiculous behavior of people in LA. And it's like, oh, they're completely, you know, it's completely on the button. You know, it's not exactly subtle what the show's doing. It's paying its dues to this song.
That's totally in keeping with the subject matter.
Exactly. I absolutely love it. I think it's brilliant. And
so Sky Comedy.
Sky Comedy. And now I think you'll like it, Kay. Mm-hmm. I think you'll appreciate the madness of it. You'll absolutely fucking hate it. You won't be able to cope with it.
Right, good to know.
That's my guess. But it's a real shame that we didn't all see it. Only I saw it because it's a big thing. I think it'll be quite a big deal.
Okay.
There you go.
Boyd Loves LA then. And when does that air?
That airs, I think today. Yes, indeed.
On the Sky Comedy/Now. Okay.
Yes.
Finally this week, we have the latest take on the Robin Hood legend. This one has Jack Patton as Robin, or Rob, as he likes to be known here. And Sean Bean.
Yeah,
he is Robert. Yeah, that's right. Robert of Locksley.
Yep.
But he goes by Rob. And Sean Bean is the Sheriff of Nottingham. And there's archery, there's banditry, lots of hanging out in the forest, you know, the occasional ominous stone castle, basically everything you would imagine from your classic Robin Hood saga. The question is, of course, is this the definitive take on the Prince of Thieves? Kay, did you have a good time in the woods? Would you go down in the woods today to watch this?
I saw what you did there.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it. Look, my take on this is it's all right. Okay, I think Sean Bean is good as the Sheriff of Nottingham. He's got, you know, that kind of like sinister edge. And it's covers the main characters. The first episode is all about setting up these characters, etc. Introduce us to Hugh of Loxley and his son, as you've referred to, and his wife, etc. And Maid Marian. I think she's good. I think Maid Marian. I've got to find the actor's name. Lauren McQueen. I found it to be slightly, a little pedestrian. I felt like they had a lot of lingering shots, for example, that I thought I could live without, the extended hunting scene. I just felt like it wasn't as tight as it could be. And consequently, it does the job, right? It sets the scene and we know where we are in English history and the main players. But other than that, I wasn't like, right, I need to watch the next episode. I was like, okay, I've seen now the new version of Robin Hood and that's it. Do you disagree?
No, I think you've been kind. I thought this was borderline preposterous.
Ooh.
It was a bit like Robin Hood Men in Tights, the Mel Brooks version of the inadvertently funny. I mean, it was more entertaining, perhaps, than I expected. I was slightly dreading. I was like, oh, God, there have been so many, it's so many versions of Robin Hood. Even in recent years, there's the Taron Egerton film. There was the Ridley Scott's version.
Yes, Russell Crowe.
None of them very good, by the way. I think, Robin Hood is one of Ridley Scott's least engaging films.
I will always stand for the Costner Robin Hood.
The Costner Robin Hood, I'll tell you, 100%.
Which is genius.
Yeah. Oh,
and also, I pity anyone trying to play the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Indeed.
After Alan Rickman.
Alan Rickman. I mean, Sean Bean is pretty good in
it. Also, it's a slightly different play because he's not overtly excessively villainous in this. Like, he's a slightly more nuanced take on that character.
Because
Stephen Waddington, on the other hand, who plays like the Earl of Huntingdon, is a twat.
Yeah, he's horrendous. Yeah, he's absolutely awful. But what I thought, it was more watchable and less of a trial than I partly expected. I was like, oh, what can they do? But it's also like completely bizarre. In the first 10 seconds, there's boobs.
Oh, yes.
There's most gratuitous
fight scenes and boobs. Yeah.
Just women with their breasts out for no good reason. And it's like,
yeah,
what are you doing?
It sets it stall out, doesn't it? Yeah.
It sets it stall out. There's a shagging scene like halfway through with a cat involving a cat. Completely unnecessary.
But also, did you not find this? It was more like the lingering shots
and
the close-ups.
Yes.
And I was like, do we need to go that close?
That's the inadvertent comedy of it is that there's a love at first sight thing going on between Robert, Robbie, Rob.
And meet you in the forest.
And they're like eyeing each other up. Honestly, it's like a fucking comedy. It's hilariously directed and performed.
Yeah,
and it's like, I was actually halfway through, I was like, Mel Brooks could not, this is funnier than Mel Brooks' version, because Men in Tights is one of his least good films as well. But it was just ridiculous. And all the way through, there are these moments where suddenly a directorial decision is made that is just preposterous. And massive close-ups.
Yeah, the close-ups.
Huge close-ups.
But so close.
So close.
Yeah. I was like, this is very 4K.
It's entering bear territory.
Who's the actress who plays Marion, you said?
It's Lauren McQueen.
If I was her agent, I'd be like, you cannot film this close up her nose. I'm sorry. It's not fair. It really isn't. And it's just mad. I just found it. What the decisions in this, creative decisions in the show are fucking bonkers. And so it could have been.
My question is, like, when I was watching it also, it was like, who's this aim for? Like, because.
Well, I know. MGM Plus. This
where
is,
can
you
get that even?
It's like an extra channel on Prime Video, I think.
Oh, okay.
Maybe, mainly. And you'll find it. I think you can get it on the Sky platform somewhere as well. Because recently they had Billy the Kid was their kind of big show they had three series of, which is a similar kind of thing. You know, it's like a kind of outlaw figure from history, kind of whose story has been told millions of times before. I don't know what MGM Plus is obsessed with these kind of characters. That was a decent show, to be fair. And I like Tom Blythe. I interviewed him for this podcast. He was a delight. But it is weird that they seem to be going to this type of show. Count of Monte Cristo is a little bit got that.
Yes. Boyd, cease and desist.
It's potentially another bit of a Euro pudding.
How dare you?
But with weird ingredients going on. I just thought it was weird. Like, every time every time you thought it was just going to settle down and be, in quotes, like, normally shot and acted, something weird and bonkers happens, which I guess makes it more interesting than it could have been, for sure. So, it is an origin story of Robin Hood, and it is full of gratuitous things going on. But it could have been a lot worse, but equally is very inadvertently funny. for me.
How many did you watch?
Only one.
I could only do one.
I watched two.
Okay.
Because I you get to the end of episode one and we are so far away from him actually becoming Robin Hood. He's literally just still Rob, my mate Rob.
Yeah.
Like, and you're like, okay, I've got to watch it. I need to. I got to the end of episode two.
You wanted
two.
To get to the moment where he goes, do you know what, everyone? Can you all call me Robin?
Yeah.
Rather than Rob or Robert?
I think I'm
and
just,
they go, wait a minute, your name's Robert.
The
not
artist
Robin.
Formerly known as Rob. The outlaw formerly known as Rob. I'm going to do that again, Darren. The outlaw formerly known as Rob. Yeah, he's. I got to the end of the second episode. He's still not Robin Hood. At the end of the second episode.
Up.
It does take its sweet time to get somewhere. I didn't. Hate it.
No,
I was quite entertained.
I don't know if that's a compliment you think it is.
No, I mean, but also like the characters just make incredibly stupid and dare I say it, not very believably human decisions.
Yes,
to drive the plot, and you're kind of like I'm okay. I'm vaguely entertained by this. Like, you know, I'm not super bored or anything.
Please refer to our reference of the fight scenes and boobs in the first few minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it was brought to us in, you know, 3D nipple vision. But,
God.
I mean, yeah, and there's a whole bit with like sort of nymphs and dryads cavorting. And it's just like, I don't really understand why this is happening, but sure.
What about, there's the bit where the dad, or the horrible dad, what's his name?
Don't.
The Earl of Huntingdon.
Stephen Walters is going to like whip his...
Whip
her into shape.
Yeah.
For Jesus Christ.
I mean, he's two-dimensionally villainous. I quite like what Sean Bean did with the Sheriff of Nottingham. I think, alas, the Earl of Huntingdon did not have a lot to work with. But
less said, soonest mended.
Do
you know what? Every time I have flashbacks to moments in the show that really made me laugh. Do you remember this? The guy comes in, I don't know what the name of the coach is, with the weirdest accent, like a Cockney almost, going, Loxley, Loxley! And he kind of attacks him. Do you remember that bit at the end of, towards the end of the first episode?
Yes, I must admit,
Who's that guy?
He's a poacher. I also had that question.
In the cell.
All right, talking like that.
I had questions as to where he was supposed to come from.
It's hilarious.
I was like, what's happening?
Honestly,
here?
If you designed this as a comedy, it couldn't be fun.
Yeah, he's not great. It's not great. No. It has to
I
be
feel
said.
Bad, but it's true. What they're saying is true.
Yeah, and I think, like I say, I wasn't super bored, but I'm not going to be watching anymore. Sorry.
Same.
To be fair, you did too.
I did too. Yeah, I did double what you did.
Yeah, I mean, that is impressive.
Okay, Robin Hood then, which is on MGM Plus.
That's also started.
Also started yesterday,
already,
didn't it?
Yes. You may work out there's a lot of highly embargoed shows we can't review this week.
We should mention the reason why we are not covering a lot of the shows that we would otherwise is, yes, there are embargoes a go-go. We've got to work out what we're going to do next week and what we're going to do on Plus, because we've got the Ryan Murphy, we've got Pluribus coming up as well. There's a lot to talk about. We might push some of that into next week's main show. It depends what else is out. So we won't do the admin here live on the show, but we will figure it out. So there'll be something in Pilot Plus and then there'll be more next week. But we need to talk about what our pick of the week is.
DCR.
Oh, God, yeah, of course. I mean, it's not even any...
Down Cemetery Road.
Yeah. Although I Love L.A. is really good.
Oh, yeah, if I'd watched that, you know, that would be probably a contender.
Yeah, I mean...
For James, it's Robin Hood.
It's really not Robin Hood. Okay, fine, brilliant. Well, that is it. We're done.
We haven't done what else is on.
Oh, we haven't. That's right. We've got that extra bit. What else is on?
Look, like Martin McCutcheon. This is Boyd's moment.
Yeah, sorry, Boydie. Because I guess we'd briefly touched on it. So.
Exactly.
Go on, tell us in detail all of the things that we should have covered but weren't able to.
This coming Sunday, the 9th of November, 2025, 9 o'clock, Channel 4 has a new four-part drama adapted by one of the writers of Bad Sisters. It's called Trespasses. It's set in the Troubles in 1975, and it's a love story between a Catholic teacher, played by Lola Pettigrew, and a Protestant lawyer, played by Tom Cullen, the excellent Tom Cullen.
Yes,
always
big
excellent
fan
Tom
of his.
Cullen, who's recently in The Gold. It looks really good. And Gillian Anderson, I should say, is in it. She plays her mum.
Bury the lead. Why don't you?
I kind of buried the lead slightly. I admit that. All Her Fault starts on Friday on Sky Atlantic. And now, this is a huge big deal because it's Sarah Snook's first big show since Succession.
I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, and this is all about her little kiddie boy son is doing his first play date with a mate from school. And she goes to pick him up. And the woman who's there in the house where the play date's supposed to be happening has no idea what she's talking about, has never heard of this kid. And
basically, every parent's nightmare.
Well, this sounds a lot like that show that we did with Holiday Granger last year.
It's extremely similar. It's very, very similar. In premise, in initial premise, thankfully it's very different after that. Like, this is more about all of the neighbours and the school mums and everything judge her for, and they're all partly could all be responsible as well for what happened. It's kind of like a why done it rather than who done it. But in, mm-hmm. I'm not allowed to review. I've got to stop banging on about it now. That's the premise. That's the premise, and it's a big deal, so we should probably end up trying to review it. Anyway,
right.
That's on Friday. All's Fair, the previously mentioned Ryan Murphy show about a bunch of female divorce lawyers with Kim Kardashian
and Sarah Paulson
and Glenn Close. Okay,
What a potent mix.
What a mix. It really is a mix. That is heavily embargoed. That comes out on Tuesday tomorrow, but the embargo is like 5 a.m. Tuesday morning.
I hate that word now. I hear it so much.
I know. I bet the listeners hate it as well.
It's like water torture.
But it's true. Pluribus, as James mentioned, that starts on Friday on Apple TV Plus and is embargoed to that very day, annoyingly, as well. There's Maxton Hall, The World Between Us. You know, that's a German production, but it's set in Oxford University.
Of course.
That's on Prime Video Friday the 7th. I Love LA. We did I Love LA. Obviously, I reviewed that at great length. Sorry to be boring. Shetland is back on Wednesday. Kate's favourite.
Yes.
BBC One, Wednesday, 9 p.m, 2025. And that is about it. Thank you very much.
Okay, brilliant. Well, we are, in fact, now done. If you would like to leave us a rating, please do so. 5 stars, please. That'd be lovely. And cake, if you want to send it, would be nice too. Follow us on the socials, mainly Instagram, but whatever you like, at James C. Dyer, at Kay Rivera, at Boyd Hilton, at Pilot TV Pod. Next week, we will have Jack Whitehall on the show to talk about Malice, which is his new show, which debuts on Prime next week. What else is next week? The stuff that we talked about that was embargoed that we couldn't cover this week, but there are other things out this week. Wild Cherry, Landman's Back, Summer Water, The Beast in Me. So, we'll have to pick through what we're going to cover. So you'll just have to wait and see what happens. Okay, right, that is it. Fine, we're done. I'm going to now decide whether or not to continue watching Robin Hood or to watch The Wheel. Robin Hood, The Wheel.
One. Yeah.
Where to begin? Option.
I don't know which is funnier, to be fair.
Pilot out.